I'm Karen Given. Like every good romantic comedy, our next story begins with a classic Hollywood meet-cute. Edward Bell was producing promotional events for the 1984 Olympics, and one day he got a call from McDonald's wondering if he could find a celebrity from the sport of swimming.
I said, well, there's Buster Crabbe.
Buster Crabbe was an actor who had won gold in the freestyle at the 1932 Olympics, but Buster Crabbe didn't work out.
And they said, did you know anybody else? And I said, well, yeah, Esther Williams. And they said, fine, can you get her? And I said, oh, yeah, sure.
Edward didn't actually know Esther Williams, but he did own a telephone.
So I picked up the telephone, and I called her, and I told her what we needed. She said, would you like to meet for lunch? Of course would I like to meet for lunch. Esther Williams, I saw her movies at Radio City Music Hall when I was a kid.
Edward arranged to meet Esther at a restaurant in L.A.
She was late. She was an hour late. And when I saw her walk in, I stood up and knocked the whole table over. Everything, the wine, the glasses, everything. She thought that was very funny.
Do you remember what Esther ate at that lunch?
I don't remember anything else about the lunch. I think I was so taken by the fact that I loved movie stars. I knew a lot of them. She was extraordinary. She was so charming and bright that I was so taken with her.
McDonald's ended up going in another direction, but Edward helped Esther get a different job at those Olympic Games.
Oh, that was a beautiful high boost.
NBC was looking for commentators because it was the first Olympics they had synchronized swimming. And Esther was referred to as the mother of synchronized swimming.
The judges are looking for how much they travel, how smoothly they make the transition.
Esther Williams had almost gone to the Olympics herself. In 1939, she was the reigning American 100-meter freestyle champion.
But in 1940, the Olympics were canceled because of the war. So, as Esther said, as compensation, I became a movie star.
And we can have a little huddle tonight.
And her first movie was Andy Hardy's Double Life with Mickey Rooney.
You mean a giraffe party?
Giraffe?
Well, a giraffe has a long neck.
She gave Mickey Rooney an underwater kiss.
Esther Williams starred in a new kind of movie called Aqua Musicals. They were huge MGM productions that spotlighted Esther's grace and power as a swimmer.
And there's a wonderful scene in Million Dollar Mermaid where she rises on the top of a pylon.
So picture Esther in a bodysuit covered in 50,000 gold sequins. A hydraulic lift slowly raises her six stories above the water. When she gets to the top, she calmly looks around and dives off. In real life, the water caught the gold crown secured to Esther's head. She fractured three vertebrae in her neck and was almost paralyzed. But in the movie, in the very next shot, Esther rises up out of the water, smiling, with her arms gracefully raised.
And I think, instinctively, women felt empowered by her. She was athletic, strong, and powerful. I was very proud of her. She had this strength about her, as a woman.
Maybe you've already figured this out by the tone of his voice, but Edward and Esther fell in love.
I was her fourth husband. She was my third wife, and we lasted for 30 years. We had a wonderful, wonderful relationship.
Esther Williams died in 2013, and I didn't call Edward Bell to talk about her career. I called him because I recently learned that this swimmer turned movie star was the prize, the face, and the voice of an international military competition that spanned seven decades.
Aren't soldiers silly?
Oh, my goodness.
They're goofy.
We've got lots of ways of being stupid in our forces.
That's Dr. Tom Lewis. He's a military historian. Tom served in the Australian Navy for 20 years, and it wasn't long after he joined in 1983 that he first heard about it.
I think I remember thinking that it was just one of those trophies that ships compete for. So you do have competitions in sport. You have competitions for best gunnery ship and things like that. So I would have thought it was just one of those type trophies.
But it wasn't, as Tom learned on a visit to a place called Spectacle Island.
Spectacle Island is so cool because it was two islands joined by a little strip of land. They have these huge warehouses. They're incredible. They're a couple of hundred metres long, each of them, and air-conditioned.
Spectacle Island is where the Australian Navy keeps its most prized artifacts. And it was there that Tom first saw the photo that the Australian Navy, and later the British, American, and Canadian Navies, fought over from 1943 until Esther's death in 2013. It's called the Esther Williams Trophy.
It's a rather odd-looking thing and a rather odd concept of a trophy.
Over the years, a few copies of the Esther Williams Trophy have been made. The one Tom saw is called the Fighting Copy. It's a signed photo of a smiling Esther in a wooden frame inscribed with "Take me if you dare" and "Carry me with honor." You're probably picturing a photo of Esther Williams in a swimsuit with legs for days, but Edward Bell wants you to know, this wasn't that.
It's not like Rita Hayworth or Betty Grable, where she were showing legs and bodies. This was a pretty picture. Looks like a star.
She was the prettiest thing in the Pacific at that time. You know, it was wartime at the time, 1943.
That's William Fury, U.S. Navy retired. He first saw the Esther Williams Trophy in 1956 while serving aboard the aircraft carrier USS Boxer.
She was the only picture that was on any of those ships, okay? We had pinups, but they had to be in your locker.
But the Esther Williams Trophy could be displayed right out in the open. In fact, that was one of the rules. If you liberated the trophy from another ship, you had to display it in your wardroom, the officer's mess. There were other rules, too. Here's historian Tom Lewis again.
The trophy is to remain unsecured and in full view. The trophy may only be removed by force, preferably of the brute variety, or by exceedingly low cunning and vile stealth. Use of enlisted personnel in any fashion is prohibited. The only other restrictions against firearms and clubs. Unsuccessful suitors are to be given haircuts and lodging. So haircuts and lodging would mean you'd probably have half your hair shaved off and you'd be locked inside a bathroom for a couple of hours or something like that.
And did you catch that bit about use of enlisted personnel is prohibited? This was a game for officers, and William Fury was enlisted, which meant that instead of khakis, he wore dungarees. We'd call them jeans today.
One of the officers came up to me and he says, "Hey, you're my size. Can I borrow your clothes?" I says, "What are you going to do, rob a bank or what, you know?" So, no. He says, "You'll see." Well, anyway, I gave him my dungarees, and they went over to the USS Salem, and they went aboard it and stole the picture of Esther Williams. And they brought it back and put it aboard our ship, and then the rest of the ships were all trying to steal it off of us. It was a game.
Once a ship captured Esther, they had to do two things. They'd fly a pennant, a special flag that let the rest of the fleet know that Esther was aboard. And they'd send out a message, often written as if Esther herself was sending it.
The idea of facing another winter bouncing all over the West Australian exercise area makes me a little chucky. I'm sick of feeling green and very keen to feel blue. Esther Williams sends.
Here's a piece of the message the USS Boxer sent out. It was in verse.
"Forbear, sweet loss, those British paws and regiment with heart of oak. They fought, alas, for a lost cause, those rugged men of Roanoke."
While in port, the Boxer was connected via long ropes to two submarines.
Conventionals, they weren't nukes at that time.
And once the submarine officers learned that Esther was aboard the Boxer, they attacked.
Submarine officers come aboard our ship and threw a smoke bomb in the hangar deck. and we went to fire quarters. Everybody runs to their battle stations or fire quarters. Okay, everybody's got a place to be.
And if you think sending sailors to battle stations over a photo of a swimmer turned movie star sounds dangerous, you'd be right. Many a raid for the Esther Williams Trophy ended with injuries and water rescues. The attackers took Esther and sped back to their submarine. The Boxer's officers pursued them, but when they climbed aboard the sub and started to try to open the hatches, the sub suddenly submerged.
The submarine is submerging right there, and they're all floating on top of it. So that was the end of that. They lost a battle.
Les Wood served in the Canadian Navy for 28 years. He crossed paths with the Esther Williams Trophy sometime during the Korean War. He doesn't remember the exact year.
At 97 years old, you forget things.
Fair point. So sometime during the Korean War, Les and his fellow officers of the HMCS Haida were invited over to another Canadian ship to see the trophy.
In Canadian ships, of course, they have liquor, so went in and had a few drinks, and they brought out the Esther Williams Trophy, showed it to everybody, and everybody was passing it around. And we had heard about the trophy as being a thing that the ships were having fun trying to steal from each other. So I was talking to one of my friends, and I said, you know, just for fun, we should steal it. And he says, good idea.
On their way in, Les and his friend had noticed that the ship's gangway went right past one of the wardroom windows, or portholes, and it was open.
And he went outside and down the ladder right past the porthole that we saw was open. The rest of us passed it around until we got to the window or the porthole. I passed it out to him. He took it and took off to our ship, took the trophy and hid it there.
Les doesn't remember where exactly his friend hid the trophy.
When you get to be 97, you forget a few things. Oh, I forgot that I told you that already, too.
And here's where we get to the final rule of the Esther Williams Trophy. It had to stay in the Pacific, and Les Wood and the Haida were about to head back home.
There were three American ships there, too, and we passed the trophy to them. And, of course, every other ship in the fleet now was after these three ships. So when we sailed out to the harbor that day, it was like a war going on with fire hoses and everything else. And I don't know who ever got it in the end, but that's the last I saw of it.
The Esther Williams Trophy was retired in 1957, and that should have been the end of the story. But Mick DeYoung came across the Esther Williams Trophy much later, in the 2000s. He's not in the Navy, but he spends months at a time cruising around in his sailboat. When he first saw the trophy, he was sailing in a very remote part of Australia's Northern Territory.
And honestly, you just don't see a boat up there at all. And in the bay just north of us, I saw a small patrol boat come in and anchor. It was a good, 5 miles away.
Mick's partner, Cheryl, has a brother in the Navy. And so they looked at each other and thought, wouldn't it be amazing if Cheryl's brother was on that ship? Mick radioed the ship, and believe it or not, Cheryl's brother was there. Mick and Cheryl were invited aboard.
And at the end of the tour, we were in the wardroom, the officer's mess, and on the wall was a picture of Esther Williams. The XO was showing us around, the second in charge of the ship. And I asked him, what's this all about? And he said, oh, it's a great story.
Turns out, back in 1997, 40 years after the trophy had been retired, it was being housed on Spectacle Island. You remember Spectacle Island, that place with the Navy's most precious artifacts?
So the officers of the HMAS Brisbane, I think.
He's right. It was the Brisbane.
Were being shown through by the curator of the museum. And the museum curator was sort of saying, back when men was real men, this was the Esther Williams Trophy, and we used to fight for this. And this is all speculation, of course.
Mick has no idea what was really said. But whatever it was, the officers of the Brisbane took the curator's words as a challenge.
At the end of the tour, they said, oh, we'd like to invite you back to the HMAS Brisbane. So, the next day, the curator of the museum comes to the HMAS Brisbane. They show him through, and at the end they said, we've got a presentation to make for you. And they hand him over the stolen item.
After a 40-year hiatus, the Esther Williams Trophy was back in service. Over the years, some of the sailors wrote to Esther Williams, the real one, back in Hollywood, and they'd tell her of her trophy's grand adventures in the Pacific. Esther would sometimes write back. Edward Bell says his wife was honored and a bit amazed by all the fuss.
She had a good feeling about the trophy, that she was part of this.
And there's one more story about the Esther Williams Trophy I want to tell. When Mick DeJong got back home from that sailing trip in the early 2000s, he decided to try to find the original owner of that photo. Mick's only lead was the sailor's name, Leslie Brand.
We've got literally thousands of L Brands in every state. So I thought, I'm never, ever going to find this fella. So I picked one phone number out of all of these phone numbers, and I thought, I'll just give it a go. So I rang, and I got an answering machine saying, hello, you've got Lindsay and Betty Brand. Please leave a message after the beep. I couldn't believe my luck.
Mick left a message, but he never heard back. A few days later, he called again.
And I got hold of Betty, and she goes, who are you? What do you want? And I said, look, I'm just, you know, doing some research on the Esther Williams Trophy. How do you know about the Esther Williams Trophy? That's just a story he tells the kids.
By this time, the Esther Williams Trophy had been held by more than 200 ships from four different navies. And Lindsay, Betty, and the kids, who were now in their 60s, had no idea.
Betty said, oh, he's going to want to talk to you. And I told Lindsay the full story. And he goes, I think I'm going to need a stiff drink.
And that's when Mick DeJong was finally able to answer the biggest question of them all. How did a swimmer turned movie star become the prize, the face, and the voice of an international military competition that spanned seven decades? It began with Lindsay Brand and Captain David Stevenson. They were in Durban, South Africa.
They were both frequenting the Stardust nightclub. Both trying to, you know, pick up a certain young lady.
Just to be perfectly clear, this certain young lady was not named Esther Williams. You're going to hear Lindsey Brand's words here, but this isn't his voice. We asked an actor to read his words from interviews and his unpublished memoir.
David Stevenson, pleased with himself for having beaten me for the honor of squiring a certain young lady, presented me with a framed photo of a luscious and eminently kissable Esther Williams.
The captain signed the photo, to my own Georgie, with all my love and a passionate kiss.
Why did he sign it as Georgie? Well, as they were passing each other, any officer was passing each other on the ship, you would call him Georgie and he would call you Charlie, or you'd call him Charlie, g'day Georgie.
This is during the war, remember. Officers were targets.
That was going to be the end of the story. I had this lovely picture of Esther. But then someone came along out of the blue, went into my cabin, and took it away.
That wouldn't do. So Lindsay got some help and stole his photo back.
No bloodshed, no blows, no nothing. Just we took it.
And that's really all there was to that. A few years after Mick found Lindsay, the Australian Navy arranged a ceremony to reunite the sailor with his picture of Esther Williams, if only temporarily. And then in 2010, Lindsay Brand died.
I found Lindsay only a few years before he passed away, so I got to tell him all those years later that something that he and Captain Stevenson started was such a great morale booster for all the Allied navies. And it just went on for so many years. It's what a great tradition.
When Esther Williams died in 2013, the Australian Navy officially retired her trophy again. They sent out one more ship-to-ship communication.
I was the mermaid of the Australian Navy, the desire of all who go to sea.
This time, instead of keeping Esther in one of those warehouses at Spectacle Island, every known copy of the trophy is on display in the Navy Heritage Center in Sydney, open to the public but locked away under glass, presumably to prevent further theft.
For the final time, Esther Williams sends.